In my 40-year history of broadcasting, I have never endorsed a weight loss product because most don't deliver until now. Science behind CaloCurb is so compelling that I can support it as a plausible alternative for curbing appetite and enhancing satiety to help you shed pounds. The active ingredient in CaloCurb, Amerisate, comes from a specific New Zealand-grown hops flower, which works by activating your body's own appetite-regulating chemical messengers, including GLP-1, which signals specific areas of the brain to effectively manage hunger in just 1 hour. CaloCurb is clinically proven to reduce hunger by 30%, cravings by 40%, and calorie intake by an average of 18%. CaloCurb is a safe, effective, and affordable natural appetite-suppressing supplement made in the United States with no chemicals, synthetics, or caffeine, and it doesn't cause jitters. Take control of your eating habits and cravings naturally with CaloCurb. For more information and order, just go to CaloCurb.com. That's CaloCurb.com. Use coupon code DH10 for 10% off. That's CaloCurb.com. Coupon code DH10 for CaloCurb. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, a podcast I'm very much looking forward to because it's about a wonderful book that I received a sample of. And I got to tell you that I get a ton of books. Usually it's very helpful for show prep, but sometimes I'll take the book and, you know, I'll donate to the local library. If you go to a library in certain parts of the Northeast, you may find a fabulous health book collection, courtesy of me, because I have so many books, literally hundreds, perhaps thousands of books. And sometimes I relegate them to the giveaway pile. Or these days, books are available in PDF form, so I keep them in my electronic library. This is a book that I cherish because it's a really beautiful book, and I'm going to keep it. It's entitled Be Your Own Shaman. Some people say shaman. A field guide to utilize 94 of the world's most healing plants by today's guest, Jane Barlow Christensen, together with Brian Christensen. Jane is our guest, and it is a beautiful book. It is one of those good old-fashioned large format books. It can grace your coffee table because it's got wonderful pictures of healing plants. So congratulations just on the production of this beautiful book. I also think it's a very useful compendium for our intelligent medicine listeners because it has the rundown on 94 of the world's most healing plants, and it really hits all the bases of the most common plants that we associate it with beneficial nutraceuticals. So already, congratulations, you had me at hello, Jane. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. That's actually a beautiful, big thank you for me, because this was the labor of love and an honor to my dad's legacy. And I think that if you're going to put herbal medicine into the everyday person's home, it has to be something that they don't feel overwhelmed by. Because I think that herbal medicine, even any type of traditional medicine that you might be trying to teach a normal person about, it has to be understandable and something that's pleasant to look at. So that was like the biggest compliment I think anyone's ever said, because I'm like you. I have thousands of health books, and most of them end up donated because I just don't have room. They don't really speak to me after I maybe read them once or don't read them. So that was a beautiful compliment. Thank you.
Indeed. So this one's a keeper. So tell us a little bit about how you got into this, because it appears that you have like a family tradition of herbal medicine. Your dad was a pioneer in the field. Tell us a little bit about him and your upbringing in this area.
Yeah, it's actually such a beautiful story. So I grew up the second oldest of 14 kids. My parents had 11. Yeah.
So are there certain herbs that are beneficial for fertility? You know, let's just get this off the table.
Indeed there is. Okay. But my parents they met in college. At Brigham Young University. They were both Mormon, and Mormons, like Catholics and other religions like that, have big families. That at least some of them do. So my parents just always wanted a big family. So they had 11 natural kids and then adopted 3 Native American kids.
Did you ever get left behind at a gas station? Because we hear so many of those types of stories. It's like kids get in the station wagon and it's like, wait a minute, we left Jane back there, was about 40 miles back there. I haven't heard from her in a while.
That would be a yes. There were, you know, a couple times we didn't, seatbelts weren't required back then. You know, I grew up in the 60s and 70s and every once in a while, a door might not have been shut tight when there was a kid, you know, four kids in the back seat with another kid on top of each of the kid,
right.
No seatbelt. And sometimes we'd go around a corner on our way to church or to wherever and a kid would fall out. So, I mean, it was, and it only happened a couple times and they were going very slow and it wasn't on purpose, but yeah, it was an interesting childhood. But my dad was this, his parents had a plumbing and electrical business. And he's a second of seven, and he's the only child who didn't go into the family business.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, when he was in college, he studied botany and zoology and medicinal botany in particular, because he was really curious about what made plants medicine for human beings. And it just is what made him tick. So as I was growing up, there was not only a huge garden, but there were pots of herbs and all my dad's kind of crazy, wacky, hippie friends were always over. And, you know, but that was all normal. That was all very normal for us. And so we were learning about plant medicine by just, you know, my dad would see a plant on the side of the road. If we were driving somewhere, he would literally pull over if he wanted to identify it for us and teach us about it.
Wow.
And, you know, we'd be learning, what time of the day do you harvest it? What parts of the plant do you use? Like all kinds of things. And no, you can make this into a poultice. It, you know, you have a problem with a wound or whatever. So this was just really, really normal in a world where that wasn't normal for most people. Like all the modern things were starting to come in, like packaged foods and fast foods. And, you know, there's a big resurgence from my perspective, because I'm in my 60s now and I have seen, feels like a full circle. People are like, oh, maybe if I could do something natural and go herbal, and then if I need a prescription, I can definitely do that. So I just grew up with a dad who geeked out over plant medicine, and it was a very normal part of my, just the way I grew up. So
with 14 kids, you know, there probably were a lot of opportunities for self-care. You know, someone, you know, would have the sniffles, another person would have a fever. Maybe a kid got banged up, you know, cuts, scrapes, wounds. Did your family utilize your natural self-care in addressing some of these problems?
Oh, and that was normal for us.
Mm-hmm.
That was just part of the way it was. And as we grew up and started having families of our own, it really, we all have had a deep appreciation for that type of self-healing, because we didn't run to the doctor for hardly anything, actually. You know, broken bones, not even, you know, my dad was so well-versed in how to heal that if there were fevers or even acute infections, he had the arsenal and the knowledge on how to take care of that. It was, you know, and I, as a person who now carries on his work and have for a long time, because he passed away 26 years ago. So I've been going on my own for a long time. But as a person who can appreciate the depth of knowledge my dad had and how it actually can empower me not to run to the doctor. And I don't think we should ever throw out the baby with the bathwater. If we have an acute infection, we break a bone, we need trauma care, you know, and we must use modern medicine, because like, I love the name of your podcast, Intelligent Medicine. That is intelligence, common sense and intelligence.
The best of both worlds, essentially, using all of the above approach.
Yeah.
But appropriately deploying, high-tech treatments, you know, it's kind of a backup plan, because I think there's tremendous room for enlightened self-care. So how about you? How did you further your education? Because you literally were brought up in that milieu. But did you pursue a formal education in botany, herbal medicine, pharmacognosy, any of that?
No. I am completely generationally taught. It was just a deep, deep part of what fell into my DNA. And if you think about, you know, of all the siblings I have, there's 9 girls and 5 boys. And for me, like, I never thought I'd be the one to carry on my dad's work. I just, you know, it never occurred to me. But to me, it's all self-study. You know, I don't have a practice. I do carry on some of my dad's herbal remedies. And I formulated a line of my own as well. But it's all self-taught, right. Self-study. I'm a researcher.
I have to say that, you know, in some ways my career is similar. You know, obviously, I went to medical school and I did take courses in traditional Chinese medicine. Mm-hmm. But a lot of what you learn in this field, I became an autodidact. I'm kind of drinking from a fire hose of the information that's out there, because the formal curriculum doesn't exist anymore for the type of thing that you do. There may have been such in the 19th century when herbal medicine kind of coexisted with what was called heroic medicine. Unfortunately, heroic medicine involved interventions that we now think of really horrible, like giving people mercury, bloodletting, leeches, things like that. Until it evolved into the preeminent type of medicine, which ultimately, in some ways, outcompeted traditional herbal medicine. And of course, there was an offshoot of that called homeopathy. So great. Well, let's plunge a little bit into the book. And you've neatly categorized the book. I mean, when you take 94 different herbs, I mean, you could just put them in alphabetical order. But what you've done is you've put them into chapter order based on their applicability to certain types of conditions. You've got the adaptogens, you've got digestive health, for example, you've got relaxation, sleep, stress, and anxiety. Let's look at some of those categories. And first of all, I think one of the terms that's bandied about in herbal medicine a lot is adaptogens. So tell us a little bit about what adaptogens are and give us some examples.
Yeah, I love, love, love adaptogens. In fact, they've been very beneficial for me as I've gone through this, you know, the last few, well, probably the last 10 years of my life as a woman who's now 63 and all the menopause and all that stuff. That's where I have really found it extremely helpful. But adaptogens, basically what adaptogens are, is think about the word adapt. They help your body adapt to stress, adapt to hormone changes, you know, adapt to sleep problems. Like, you know, they can calm a sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. But what I love is what they do for hormones and like stress hormones, cortisol, especially if you're in a fight or flight, you take some herbal adaptogens, they can help balance body chemistry. You know, and that's something that I have at this point, some deep, deep personal experience with. I have a 13-year-old granddaughter who is going through quite the opposite of me. She's doing, you know, going through puberty.
Right.
And
which can be a really roller coaster ride.
Oh, it can be rough.
Yeah.
But what's cool is now she reaches for some herbal adaptogens that are safe for kids her age. And she even reaches for CBD. It's not with THC, it's CBD. Hmm. And it's either soft gels or drops. And she goes and she knows where to, and she kind of has learned how to regulate. Oh, I'm starting to get really cranky. And so adaptogens really help to balance body chemistry. And fight or flight is one of those things that are really nice.
I'm glad you mentioned CBD because people think of it as a category, unto itself and associated with, narcotic drugs or, illicit drugs. But, you know, we have to understand that CBD is a component of a natural plant. And when deployed effectively, I think it is actually one of the most multi-purpose among in our armamentarium of natural nutraceuticals.
I couldn't agree more. In fact, we have an endocannabinoid system. This is something that they discovered in the 1990s. It's like we're born with receptors that recognize cannabis, CBD, and there's so many reasons. In fact, here's something I need to say. Because last year I self-published the book that you have, and then it was actually picked up by Skyhorse Publishing, which is in New York City where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And what I decided to do is add an extra chapter so there's actually 101 plants, and the chapter is a chapter of psychedelics and sacred plants, and one of them is cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
So this was actually just released on May 28th on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, because it was picked up by a publisher, which is also really rare for a self-published book to be picked up by a publisher.
Yeah.
Thank you. In fact, I would love to send you.
I would love to get it. Yeah,
the new one with
offline,
the extra
chapter. I'll give you the information. That would be great.
So,
we have to consider them part of a comprehensive look at the potential for plant medicine. But coming back to our theme of adaptogens, they're the traditional ones that we tend to identify as adaptogens in your chapter. But there's some ones that kind of are a little bit different than people are used to. So, we tend to talk about things like ginseng, obviously as an adaptogen.
Ashwagandha.
For some reason, you did not choose to include those in your section on adaptogens. And you include some things. I think some people are familiar with maca. We can talk about that. Holy basil. Let's explore the potential of some of these things. Of course, there's rhodiola as well, often talked about as an adaptogen. But you feature other things in your chapter.
Yeah, I really wanted to break outside of the spectrum of the really traditional, well, not traditional, the ones that are super well-known.
Maybe another word might be commercialized, actually.
Yeah, I totally agree. So like one of the ones in there is suma root. And suma grows in Brazil. It's a root that the part of the plant you use is a root. And what I really truly love about suma, I have a lot of deep experience with this because before I did the work I'm doing with my dad's work, I used to own a gym, a health club, and I was a personal trainer. So for my first 20 years of my adulthood, I owned a gym. I was a personal trainer, and I loved nutrition, and so I have this whole fitness and nutrition background. And one of the things, and because my dad had made a suma root tincture, I had it available. And what I've discovered, and this is the cool thing about something, an adaptogen like suma, is if you're low in estrogen or testosterone, it'll naturally help balance it up to where you need to be. If you're high in estrogen or high in testosterone or even progesterone, it will bring it into balance. So suma is a
And I think that's the precise definition of an adaptogen, something that neither increases nor decreases, but puts you into homeostasis, like in balance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And from my experience, suma is one of those that is really, really good for people who are active and weightlifters. And that's just been something that, and I still am very active and I still lift weights, and that's something that I take daily. So.
Right.
And then maca is a beautiful,
I take personally.
That's incredible. Yeah. I mean, it's just such a beautiful adaptogenic herb that also has other properties. It's got some anti-cancer benefits. It's got because a lot of plants do. It's even got a tiny bit of digestive health.
And by the way, what's interesting about your book and the descriptions of the herbs is that we tend to, in our modern approach to herbal medicine and looking at certain nutraceuticals, we tend to say that they're good for one thing. So for example, curcumin would be, it's an anti-inflammatory. But, you go down the list of the multiplicity of end organ effects of any one of these herbs. And I think that's the intriguing thing about plant medicine. Unlike very laser-like targeting by pharmaceutical drugs, there are multiple beneficial off-target effects of certain plant extracts when, especially when taken in whole form, because they're not just purified compounds. There's a spectrum of nutrients within these plants. Am I stating the case correctly?
1,000%. And I really believe the way that I use herbal medicine is really resonates with me is the whole of it. It's kind of like you mentioned curcumin, which is from turmeric. There's so many benefits to taking the whole root of turmeric. And I take a capsule of turmeric, and I use turmeric in my cooking, and I use turmeric in smoothies, and I love turmeric. But I also add a little bit of black pepper to my turmeric capsule because of the piperine in it and what it does.
It potentiates it.
Yes. It when a little bit of black pepper will help release an enzyme in your liver that helps your body absorb. You probably know all of this, but it helps your body absorb and assimilate all the benefits of turmeric and curcumin and everything. So yeah, I love the whole rather than having something isolated. So to me, that's the beauty of the whole. It's like,
indeed,
you know, you're getting everything. You're getting the spectrum of, okay, this is also good for your skin. There might be anti-inflammatory, but it's good for your skin and it's good for digestion and it's good for inflammation. And yeah,
And this is actually where there's a bit of a schism in herbal medicine, or we now call these things with a fancy word, nutraceuticals. Because in traditional herbal medicine, we would make a decoction or a tincture or a tea of an entire plant or a part of a plant. And in the modern iteration of this, the way that this has been popularized is we create standardized extracts. And so if you want to take saw palmetto, it's got, you know, this amount of a, whatever, 85% standardized extract, the palmetto sides or whatever the compound, the active compounds are. And, you know, ginkgo lides with ginkgo biloba, for example. But it's you're more in the traditional camp and believe that the whole plant in more of a raw form, less refined form, is beneficial?
Yeah, I mean, and there's different ways to prepare. And let me give you a good example. So there's a plant in the book. It's called lomatium, and and I don't know how familiar you are with lomatium.
It's used for smoking cessation, isn't it? Lomatium. Coughing, respiratory.
It's got powerful antimicrobial properties, and I believe that the antiviral properties are its most powerful. Okay. And I've been using it personally for about 40 years. And it also has anti-yeast, anti-candida. It does have some antibacterial properties while not disturbing any beneficial bacteria. So it's really a broad spectrum. But there's an interesting alkaloid in there that causes a one-time detox rash in about 10% of the people when they use it for the first time.
Okay.
So there are some, and my dad studied this plant for about 30 years. There's a beautiful history behind it. It was used in the Spanish flu of 1917, 1918. There's a beautiful story behind all of that. But because of this potential detox rash, which shows up at about a week, a lot of people it's very intense. It's not dangerous. It's not contagious. I believe that if the liver is a little compromised, the body will say, okay, I finally have a tool to release a viral load, because we find that people that have chronic viral loads, like anything under the Epstein-Barr virus family, are a little more prone to getting this one-time detox rash. Shows up at about a week after using this plant, and it can be very, very intense. So there are some companies that made lomatium extracts or products, and they make an isolate, and they isolate out that piece that causes the rash. But here's the thing, it doesn't work the same. Oh, you're not going to get the benefit because Mother Nature made it so perfect that some people need to have this reaction. And it it's not pleasant to go through. It only happens once. So it doesn't show up when you first start. So it's classic.
Right.
So to me, the whole is always better.
Interesting. And
yeah.
But, you know, I think this has been sort of the route to popularization of herbal medicine, as with so many things. It actually, in a way, it follows the pharmaceutical drug model, because we've developed an enormous number of medications from plants. And then the whole thrust of the pharmaceutical model is to take the, quote, active ingredient and then extract it, purify it, and in some cases synthesize it, make it in a vat, you know, a chemical vat, so that we can mass produce it. But that's getting away from the, excuse the pun, the roots of herbal medicine.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Right. Okay. So among the others that you talk about, holy basil is another one of the adaptogens. It is in many formulas, herbal formulas, I will concede, but I don't think that many people are familiar with it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also known as Tulsi. So you might see it under that. It's just one of those, it's in the blend that my granddaughter takes. So it's really safe for kids. And it's just got a really broad you know, older people, anybody can take it. And I think it's just one of those, almost like, you know, I'm so used to using it. It's almost like echinacea. So many people are so familiar with echinacea.
Yeah.
But yes. Holy basil is one of those adaptogens that I, you know, I think is important to know about because it's so safe. It's so works so fast and really helps to calm those systems and bring them into homeostasis. So, yeah, it has all the properties of a good adaptogen system. Beautiful thing to know about.
And apropos of echinacea, you know, there's a lot of controversy about echinacea. Is it the leaves?
Yeah.
Is it the root? You know, what's the best part of the plant? And then the question also arises, well, it does boost immunity. Is it mm-hmm. something that you should take all the time or should you only take it part of the time? And then there's the question like, oh my goodness, well, if you have an autoimmune condition, your immune system's in overdrive, is it contraindicated? I mean, there's controversy about echinacea that maybe you're familiar with.
Yeah, of course. In fact, echinacea is one of those plants that your body will build an immunity to.
A tolerance. You just get used
to it. They'll build a tolerance to it. That's probably a better way to describe it. And so I always say if you're going to take echinacea for during cold and flu season, they can help get your immune system, or it actually has antiviral properties too. So it's actually good. It's good for, you know, to help clear up a cold or something. But it's not something I would take every single day because your body built a tolerance to it and you need to take a break. I always like to say, if you want to take something every day, do a month on echinacea, a month on golden seal, then go back to echinacea and go back to golden seal. So there's things that you can go back and forth on. As far as stimulating or like messing up an autoimmune response, I personally don't. From my research, I don't believe that's a problem.
Yeah, I tend to agree because I think it relies on an oversimplified view of the immune system as just being a kind of a like a dimmer switch. I think the immune system is kind of like a dimmer switch, but maybe in 100 different dimensions. And, you know, some things that supporting the immune system can actually help an autoimmune condition. Because paradoxically, autoimmune people with serious autoimmune conditions like lupus are very prone to bacterial and viral infections. They have low immunity to pathogens, but they have an over-exuberant immunity to self, and they attack their self.
Yeah.
We're kind of playing word association, but you mentioned golden seal. Golden seal is a very, very traditional herb, but it's got something in it called berberine. And these days, people are using extract of golden seal. Now I think it's made from another plant, which is more plentiful, less endangered. But berberine is popular for blood sugar control. But I believe that golden seal was a pretty popular, you know, in the on the frontier in traditional medicine. Traditional Native American medicine was used as an antibacterial, right?
Absolutely. I love golden seal too.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, great point at which to pause because, as our listeners know, we divide our podcast into two parts. When we return, we're going to talk more about specific herbs for specific purposes. A wonderful book, a book that I highly recommend that you get it on your shelf if you're interested in natural self-care. Be Your Own Shaman, a field guide to utilize 94 of the world's most healing plants by today's guest, Jane Barlow Christensen. And when we return, more on this subject. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Telligen Medicine.